You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being here. SEC basketball is the best conference in America. There's really no debate about it right now. Today on the podcast, we're going to just kind of dive into this and look at the numbers and tell you exactly what's going on in the conference, because it's really quite remarkable. And we'll talk about where Arkansas's place in the SEC basketball hierarchy is right now. More portal news overnight with Rashad DeBinion transferring away from Arkansas. The Razorbacks got a couple of new portal commitments yesterday. We'll talk about that a little bit later with Christina Long. But first, Anthony Christensen's here with me. The SEC this month, the stat that's been making the rounds this morning, 50-4 in the month of December. And after last night, there were a couple of SEC over ACC wins. You had Florida beating North Carolina at the Jumpman Invitational in Charlotte. You had Clemson losing to South Carolina. A little bit of an upset there. Clemson ranked in the top 25 right now. They had the SEC-ACC Challenge a couple of weeks back. This year, the SEC is 30-4 against the ACC. The ACC, you know, I mean, it's not the ACC that we've seen in the past, but still, that's kind of the bar. I mean, that's the bar for college basketball. You want to measure yourself against the ACC, and this year the SEC is doing remarkably well. Anthony, this conference is unlike anything we've seen in basketball. John Calipari made the statement when they were at Madison Square Garden. He said, I'm being told it's like SEC baseball, where anybody can beat anybody on any given day. And really, it feels like that's the case. We're going to see when they start conference play here in a few weeks. But based on what they're doing right now in the non-conference, it's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we had talked a little bit preseason about whether I thought the SEC or the Big 12 was going to be better. And I said the Big 12, so I guess that's an indictment on my ball knowledge. But no, I mean, the SEC has been phenomenal. I mean, you've got one team with more than three losses, and that's South Carolina, who just beat a good Clemson team. In overtime, didn't foul up three, which led it to overtime, but still won the game. I mean, you've got, I think it's three undefeated teams remaining in Florida and Tennessee, and I think Oklahoma as well. Oklahoma with another quality opportunity against Michigan tonight. Mm-hmm. To kind of keep building on that. But I mean, the SEC has just been, it's been really good. I mean, you can say, you know, some teams haven't played necessarily the most brutal of schedules, which, you know, is fair. But I mean, even like, say, Missouri, for example, hasn't played the toughest schedule, still beat Kansas mm-hmm. pretty handily too. I know. Yep. Kansas made it a game in the second half, but never really felt like Kansas was going to win that game. I mean, even Vanderbilt, only loss is to a really good Drake team. So I mean, there's a lot to like, top up and down from just about everybody in the SEC so far. And I mean, they're going to keep getting some quality opportunities, and then conference play is just going to be a bloodbath. It'll be fun to watch and cover for sure.
So 50-4 in the month of December, and I looked through the SEC's basketball schedule in December, and here's some of the games that I think are the most notable results so far, and this is just over 17 days, really 14 days, because nobody played the first 2 days of the month. So this is in the last 2 weeks. I've got a couple of wins in here over Louisville. Because, and you might hear that and think, well, Louisville's not any good. Well, they're better this year.
Much better. Pat Kelsey's done a good job there.
They've got some injuries that's, you know, pulled them back down a little bit. But anyway, here are the games that I've got that I think are the results, you know, the best results so far in the conference this month. Ole Miss over Louisville, Alabama over North Carolina, Mississippi State beat a really good Pittsburgh team by 33 in the challenge. Kentucky beat Gonzaga in Seattle. I think they were down by like 18 points.
Came back
and that was an incredible game. Overtime or double overtime? I mean,
it was overtime. I was watching. I was fighting for my life to stay awake because it was late. But yep. It was worth staying awake for. That's for sure.
That's one of the best games of the year so far.
Yeah.
Kentucky and Gonzaga. Missouri beat Kansas in Columbia back on a Sunday about a week and a half ago. Arkansas beat Michigan at Madison Square Garden. Texas A&M beat Purdue on a, quote, neutral floor in Indianapolis, but, I mean, that's basically a Purdue home game. Mm. Auburn beat Ohio State by 38 in Atlanta.
That Ohio State team is fraudulent, though.
Well, but what I was going to say is, and I was about to make this point, I don't know how good Ohio State is, but to beat another power conference team by 38 on a neutral floor, that's
saying something.
It's eye-opening. Kentucky beat Louisville at Rupp the other day. That was a really good game. Tennessee beat Illinois on a buzzer beater. Alabama beat Creighton the other night. Florida beat North Carolina last night. South Carolina beat Clemson last night. Those are some really good, you know, quad one type wins that they've had. The only losses for the SEC this month, two of them were in the challenge. Clemson beat Kentucky. Duke beat Auburn. No shame there. UConn beat Texas. Again, no shame there. And, you know, really the only, you know, kind of outlier result so far is SMU beating LSU. And this is an LSU team that there's probably 15 teams in the SEC, and then there's LSU, right?
LSU maybe. And South Carolina.
See, I'd put South Carolina over LSU, though, because especially after South Carolina beat Clemson last night.
I mean, LSU, I mean, played against Stetson last night, and Stetson's not been great. But, I mean, LSU also has wins over Florida State or Kansas State as well.
But they also have two of the losses to the ACC.
Which is kind of funny. One of those obviously to a good Pitt team, though, as you mentioned, got, you know, ran out of the gym by Mississippi State. Dog walked Bulldogs.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. it's been impressive, and there's going to be more, you know, opportunities for them to kind of grow or build on this. I think Missouri plays against Illinois at a neutral site on Saturday or Sunday, one of the two. We mentioned Oklahoma against Michigan. There's still going to be those opportunities for the SEC to keep building this. It's almost, you know, it's the top rated league on KenPom by almost 4 points, which is unheard of. You're probably looking at, you know, a league that gets a record number of bids into the NCAA tournament. The record right now is 11, which the Big East set, I think, in 2013.
Joe Lenardi right now is projecting 13.
Yeah, which is wild.
Yeah, it's insane.
But top to bottom, there's not a bad team in the SEC.
Well, you just look at the AP poll. There's two things I want to read here. The AP poll, these are the SEC teams in it. You got number one, Tennessee, number two, Auburn.
I think that's 1A, 1B.
Number four, personally. Kentucky, number six, Alabama, number seven, Florida. Going on down the list, A&M is number 12, OU is number 14, Ole Miss is number 17. And that's it from the SEC.
OU is probably a little higher. Somebody accidentally voted for Oklahoma State.
Was that right?
Yeah. Which,
but then you look at right outside the top 25, the top three receiving votes are Mississippi State, Arkansas, and Missouri. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's really good. And then I was looking, too, at the record of SEC teams. And again, some teams play different schedules, but I feel like everybody's played some good competition to this point. We're deep enough into the season. And these are the records in the SEC. 11-0, 11-0, 10-0, 10-1, 10-1, 10-1, 10-1, 10-1, 9-1, 9-1, 9-2, 9-2, 9-2, 9-2, 8-2, 8-3.
That's not bad.
You don't see that this deep into the season a lot of times.
No, absolutely not. And
the win streaks, like all of them have won their most recent game. You've got win streaks of 11, 11, 10, 10, 5, 5. The worst team in the SEC, like you said, maybe South Carolina, they're on a 5-game winning streak.
Yeah. No, I watched that South Carolina Clemson game right now last night. Awesome game, awesome environment there in Columbia. A lot of fun to watch. I mean, that's still a good team. I mean, you're talking about a team that, you know, if things go their way, it's probably or could end up in the NCAA tournament. Do I think South Carolina is going to be good enough in SEC play to get to the tournament? Probably not. Same thing with maybe an LSU or a Vanderbilt. But, I mean, Vanderbilt's looked really good. I don't know if you've watched any Vanderbilt hoops lately. But, I mean, Mark Byington's
I'll leave
got
that
those
to
guys.
You.
Mark Byington's got those guys playing. And like I said, their only loss is to a really good Drake team who went into Kansas City, so neutral floor, and beat Kansas State last night. Neutral floor with Kansas State's logo on it, but a very good Drake team that they lost to. I mean, Missouri's only loss is a true road game at Memphis, which we've seen Memphis is very good this season. Just that lone kind of weird blemish against another very good Arkansas State team. Kentucky's only loss is a true road game to Clemson. I mean, you're looking at, there's not a bad team in the league at all.
John Calipari had his radio show the other night. This was Monday night out at Sassy's off of Weddington. And he was talking about the SEC, and this is what he had to say.
There are teams way ahead of us right now. It's fine. And this league, folks, Oh, my. This league, there are teams that are going to have a losing record in this league and be in the NCAA tournament. Are you ready? And advance. That's how good this league is. There are 10 or 11 teams. How about this? 15 of the 16 teams, if you win on their court, it's a quad one win. What? Which means every game we play is going to be a war. And if we're at home, our building has to be absolutely hopping and give us a 10-point advantage. Has to. And then with a 10-point advantage, maybe a buzzer beater, we win.
That was John Calipari, courtesy of Hogs Plus and the Razorback Sports Network the other night. He made a comment after their game against UCA, I think, last Saturday. He said, I used to BS people and say that this was a league that deserved 8 bids. He goes, I really didn't mean that. He said, you know, there were maybe only a few teams that deserved, but I'm out there, you know, I have to speak on behalf of the conference, and so I have to prop the conference up. There's no BSing this year about how good the SEC is, and you're hearing it from coach after coach after coach.
And you've been hearing it from coach after coach after coach from, I mean, SEC Media Days, which, I mean, obviously Media Days, everybody's going to, you know, big up their conferences. I mean, that's been happening since I've been covering Media Days in the Missouri Valley, which obviously that's a good league, but still. I mean, everybody at Media Days was talking about how they think the SEC could get, you know, 10 double-digit bids into the NCAA tournament, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everybody's kind of been talking about it, but now to see it in practice, I mean, it's been very, very interesting and very fun to watch. I mean, like you said, I mean, that Tennessee game against Illinois, not Tennessee's best performance by any means, but still got the win on a buzzer beater. Illinois' defense on that last sequence, questionable, but they still got the win in a true road game against a very good Illinois team. Like I said, up and down, I mean, you can point to every team and just look at, you know, something that they've done extremely, extremely well. Mm-hmm. Which you can't say that for, you know, every team in every league at all.
Well, I got one more clip I want to play here. This was from SEC This Morning on College Sports Radio on Sirius XM earlier this week. This was Bruce Pearl talking about the strength of the league.
I don't know if you could have seen the league being this good because it's historic. I mean, I know that in 2019, the ACC had 3 number one seeds, and there was a year where the Big East may have had something close. But I don't know how it's all going to play out, guys, because we're just going to beat each other's brains up during the course of the regular season. But it is historic, and you know, I'm proud of the league. I'm happy for, you know, Greg Sankey and his commitment. You know, Garth Glissman, our commissioner sort of basketballs, is in his second year, and he's done a great job. But more than anything, I think it's the commitment of every university with the coaching staff, the commitment to NIL, the commitment to, you know, the fan bases. We won't play a game on the road in the SEC that won't be sold out this year.
So that was Bruce Pearl, the Auburn head coach, and he's like, kind of like Calipari. He's one that has lived through kind of the down years of the SEC, having been at Tennessee before he was at Auburn. Wink Day, you get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. It begs the question, Anthony, where does Arkansas fit in the hierarchy of the SEC this year? I don't know that anybody expects Arkansas to compete for a conference championship. It seems to me like Tennessee and Auburn and maybe Kentucky and Florida are a cut above everybody else. Alabama, I guess you could put them in that. But then again, you know, you get to a point where it's like, well, now we're naming half the conference. Mm-hmm. And so where do you think Arkansas fits into the SEC hierarchy this year?
It's a little hard to say, obviously, just because it's still non-conference schedule time and, you know, you're still seeing teams just kind of figure out who they are. If you're telling me to pick it right now, I'd probably say somewhere in that middle kind of range. Probably just kind of in that range of like the Mississippi States, or Ole Misses, A&Ms, you know, teams along those lines. I would probably put them in that kind of category. I don't know if there's tiers to this or what. I mean, I think you kind of have to wait until conference play actually begins to start you know, breaking it down and putting it into tiers and like, okay, here's tier one, tier two, tier three, et cetera. But if I'm being asked to put them in a, I guess, yeah, probably somewhere in the middle, with, I mean, obviously they've got all the talent that you could want, not necessarily the depth, by design, but I mean, they've got the talent to push the better teams and, you know, kind of push into that, I guess, upper echelon, if you will. But yeah, I would probably say somewhere in the, I guess, that middle kind of range, if that makes sense.
Sydney, I just sent you an email that I want to reference here, if you'll pull this up for us. Anthony, I want to talk to you real quick about your AP basketball poll. And for those who don't know, when Bob Holt passed away a couple of weeks ago, the AP called, they said, do you have any recommendations on who could be an AP voter for the state of Arkansas? And I said, I think Anthony's the guy you need to talk to. So Anthony is our voter for the AP poll now, the basketball poll in the state of Arkansas. And the new poll came out the other day. While Sydney pulls that up, I will say this. I was surprised a little bit that Arkansas was not in the AP basketball poll. I thought that beating Michigan would allow them to jump back in there with a 9-2 record. They're right outside. And, it, you know, I mean, the poll, it's – You can think what you want to about the poll. It's somewhat meaningless right now, but
I think Illinois losing to Northwestern and Tennessee maybe had something to do with that
okay.
as well.
Okay. So here we've got Anthony's poll up.
Don't judge too much.
Yeah. So just kind of take us through this poll. I mean, I don't want to go through all 25 teams, but just kind of hit on some of the highlights here.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think I've got three SEC teams in my top five, Tennessee, Auburn, and Kentucky. And then I've got Iowa State and Duke in there as well. Just kind of highlighting just what I think of the conference. I mean, I think it's, let me just click on it here. Like I've got Tennessee, Auburn, Kentucky, Alabama, Florida, and Oklahoma in my top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's obviously quite a lot of, the top 10. I've got UConn kind of creeping back up into the top or kind of getting closer to the top 10.
Their win over Gonzaga the other night was impressive.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, they went on a true road game and beat a good Texas team. And, I mean, they've looked really good since Maui. I don't know how much people are watching UConn since Maui. Obviously, Maui was kind of a disaster for UConn. But since then, I mean, Dan Hurley's done something to get that team, you know, kind of cooking again. And then I've got Ole Miss at 12, which is probably a little high. I'm looking at College Poll Tracker, and it says these are extreme picks. Ole Miss, Michigan State, and Oregon. I don't know exactly how many SEC teams I've got in here.
You've got 10. I counted them.
Oh, okay. 10, thank you. Yeah. And I considered, obviously,
You've got A&M, Mississippi State, and Arkansas also yes, in your poll. Yeah. You've got Arkansas number 24.
Yes. Yeah. It hurt me to leave Illinois out, but losing two of three kind of forced my hand a little bit just in that regard, even though I think Illinois is absolutely one of the top 25 teams in the country. It's just kind of like when it's a poll, you kind of have to go on what happens on the court. But I mean, I considered a lot of other teams as well. Am I allowed to pull my phone out on here?
Sure.
I don't know if people can see it, but I've got,
especially not those listening on Apple Podcasts.
Well, yeah, that's true. So I've got I update my top 25 daily, just kind of with how it kind of works. And then I've got the next 25. So I rank 50 teams just to kind of have a basis on teams.
This is why I recommended you. It was because I knew you would geek out over this and you would be prepared. And you're not just, you know, half ass in this. You're actually looking for, you know, you're on top of it. So that's good to know.
But yeah, I've got my next 25, and then I put a little asterisk next to teams that I've like seriously considered. When I turned in this poll, I seriously considered about 15 teams for five spots. So, I mean, it's a difficult thing to do. It's hard. Because I mean, there's a lot of deserving teams. I mean, you can make an argument for, you know, 40 to 50 teams that you know, deserve to be ranked. Yeah. And especially at this point of the season. So, I mean, I'm probably relying too much on head to head at this point. Which I think head to head is fine. It's not obviously going to be the biggest deciding factor on rankings, you know, going down the line, but, I've got Arkansas ahead of Michigan. But I've got Memphis behind UConn and Dayton behind UConn. There's certain different ways to go about it. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
I want to tell you that if you go to our website, wholehogsports.com, you can read Anthony's story today on Boogie Fland and his pursuit of a triple-double. Anthony talked to Tyler Ulis a little bit yesterday just about the season that Boogie Fland is having. We're going to have a story later today, actually, about the SEC success, and Anthony will dive into that a little bit more, and then he's got some more stories planned as we lead up to Saturday's game against North Carolina A&T over at Bud Walton Arena, 1:30 tip-off for that game Saturday afternoon. I want to tell you that mentioned Apple Podcast a minute ago. If you're watching us, thank you. You can find us on YouTube, our video, search Whole Hog Sports. You can find our video on our social media pages on Twitter and on Facebook, or you can listen to an audio-only version of our podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, any of those platforms. Just search Whole Hog Sports and you'll find our latest podcast. When we come back, Christina Long will join me. We'll talk Razorback football and the latest day of the transfer carousel. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. All right, the latest in the Razorback transfer saga. You've got Rashad DeBinion out. Running back who had knee surgery about a week ago says that he's going to the transfer portal. He wasn't going to be able to play for the Razorbacks in the bowl game anyway, but now he won't be able to play for the Razorbacks anymore unless, I guess, maybe if he left the right way, as Sam Pittman says, and can come back in. Arkansas added a couple of new commitments yesterday. Cam Shanks, a wide receiver, also a return man from UAB. He signed with the Razorbacks, as did tight end Jaden Platt from Texas A&M. Of course, he played for Bobby Petrino a couple of years ago when Petrino was the Aggies offensive coordinator. Arkansas now up to six Division I transfers. Also got a junior college, maybe two junior college commits in this class. So there's a lot of roster spots left to fill. Fill, obviously, as we move along. You know, I was thinking about this as it relates to the transfer portal. 2-3 years ago, I had this thought that the teams that have always competed for titles, they're still going to compete for titles. The Ohio States, the Georgias, the Texas, those types of teams, Oregon, they're going to have a booster network that is going to continue to push cash into those programs to where they're going to be able to pay the very best players. I've said it many, many times. And we'll make more baseball analogies here. It's large market, small market baseball. It's like Major League Baseball. What I thought then, and I think is true now, and I think you're seeing it play out some, is that the teams in that next tier that are going to be successful are going to be the ones who kind of implement a college football version of Moneyball. And I think that's what you're seeing in Arkansas right now. You're seeing, yeah, I was talking to someone the other day in the program. They said, if you heard and saw the types of figures that I'm seeing and I'm hearing these players come in with, you would be astonished. You would be astonished. And I wrote something about this the other day. I said, you know, if you had, hypothetically speaking, if you had $10 million in your NIL fund and you had two players who came in, both of them said, I need $500,000 apiece to stay here. Well, you've just spent 10% of your NIL fund on less than 3% of your roster. And that happens in the NFL, but this isn't the NFL. I mean, you know, you don't have NFL quarterbacks playing in college. You do, but you know, you don't have those franchise type people that you're committing to for six, seven, however many years that these NFL contracts are in place. And so it is a little bit different. But, you know, what I think we're seeing right now with Arkansas is a money ball approach. It's, hey, Isaiah Satania just gave us X number of yards and X number of touchdowns this year. Can we go get somebody who we think can give us equal to or better than that next season? And, you know, however many portal players they're in now, 28, I think, scholarship players are in it for Arkansas. Or maybe it's 28 total, a slightly less number of scholarship players. Point being, there's a lot. One by one, can we replace Luke Haz with somebody who gave us his production? Can we replace Isaiah Satania? Can we replace down the list? I don't know if they've done it, but I look at a player like Cam Shanks, who at UAB this year had 62 catches for 656 yards and six touchdowns. He also was one of the better return guys in the country. He led the nation in punt return yards, 329, led the country in punt return average at 20.6 yards per return. He had two punt return touchdowns this year. Satania didn't get that then. Now, I understand full well Satania was playing against a better set of competition than Cam Shanks was. But if Shanks can come in and give Arkansas something like this, then they've upgraded over Isaiah Satania and his production this year. And I think that, you know, it's just a one-by-one step of can you replace this guy who's left and replace him with somebody better. And I've said it a number of times, I don't think they've had anybody who's irreplaceable.
Yeah.
At least not based on the production that they've had at Arkansas.
Yeah, I was having this exact conversation with somebody last week when I was talking about what Coach Pittman said and kind of when he described their approach to the finances of all of this, when he was basically saying, hey, this was a 6-6 team, basically saying we don't want to overpay to keep guys from a 6-6 team when we want to be better than that, mm-hmm. was basically what he said. That was the gist of it. And I was explaining this to somebody and they were like, they brought up Moneyball and they were like, so they're trying to see if they can recreate these guys in the aggregate, which is the great, you know, Moneyball line. I watched that movie for the first time like this past year. Great movie. Really? Loved it. Yeah, I know. Oh. I'm bad with movies. Anyway. The Moneyball approach is exactly what it is. And that's exactly what Coach Pittman was talking about, how they're kind of approaching it, where I think you're right. If they're able to replace or get similar levels of production for less money, that's exactly what they need to do. That's a really smart way to handle it for where they're at right now. You mentioned Shanks. I mean, Lord knows punt return was an issue this year for Arkansas. You know, I did a story that's going to be in our next Hogs Illustrated about I did 5 defining moments of the season. So mm-hmm. not necessarily best moments, but best and, you know, moments that really just kind of encapsulated how this season went. And one of them was one of the muff punts, because there were multiple. And then there were so many near misses. I went back and found how many times Satania almost got trucked by a teammate and dropped the ball. And there were so many times that it almost happened. Like, guys just way too close. So, you know, punt return is something that they need to improve on. And so Shanks is somebody that could really add that for them. And so, yeah, like you said, that's an example of where they could actually improve upon something from somebody that they lost. And that's something that they're going to have to try to do at so many different positions now, because they've lost so many starters. So I think what time will tell is if, you know, they have to hit on all these guys. And that's where you have to have a great evaluation system. You have to, you know, stats only tell you so much. You, like you said, the level of competition is different. You have to make sure, you have to be so confident that that's going to translate, with the example of Shanks, translate from the level that UAB plays at to the SEC level. You have to make sure, you know, that you're capable of getting those guys ready to play at this level. So that's going to be the next step for them. That's where, you know, that's where coaching happens. That's what their job is. So, you know, they have to hit on a lot of these. They need to continue to develop the guys they already have, the guys that they have been able to retain. And that's just where we're going to see what happens next year. That's what it's really going to come down to, as far as if they can improve from this 6-6 year.
I was looking this up. Cam Shanks against Arkansas, 5 catches for 31 yards, and he had one of UAB's touchdowns during that game earlier this year. So he's shown he can play against an SEC level defense.
For sure.
Can he do it consistently? I don't know. Tyrone Broden, the best game he ever had at Bowling Green was against Mississippi State.
Yeah.
And that didn't really translate that well.
Right.
So we'll see here. Platt, the tight end that they get from Texas A&M. I've heard a lot of people make a comparison to, well, is he an upgrade over Luke Haz? I don't know that this is the tight end that they're targeting to replace Haz. Remember, they've also got to replace Gums and Ty Washington. Gums was more of a blocking tight end. And to me, that's what Platt looks like at 6'5", 260.
Yeah, I think so. I'm speaking with a Texas A&M writer today after we record this morning that about Platt. And, you know, he was the, I think, fourth highest rated recruit in their signing class. He was a true freshman this year. So, you know, didn't put up numbers, didn't play that much this season, I don't believe. But, you know, a guy that they is similar to the offensive lineman from Oregon, whose name is Jaquan McRoy. Similar kind of vibe to that, where it was like, hey, you know, he wasn't going to be a contributor right off the bat, but he was one of the top guys in their class and they expected to have him for longer and they wanted to use him later. So he's a guy that, yeah, was a highly rated recruit not long ago, and somebody that Arkansas hopes that they can turn into a real contributor.
Platt, I think that there's the fact that he's played in Petrino's system too. If you can find some familiarity in Sharp, Raylan Sharp from Fresno State, another one who he had played for Petrino at Missouri State. These kind of intrigue me because they played in that system. And so I feel like maybe it's not going to be as big of a transition for him. I don't know.
That makes sense. Yeah. And that's something we've heard a lot from the transfers this season was how, you know, learning the Petrino offense is hard. You know, it is a complicated one. It requires a lot of it requires a lot of a quarterback. You know, that's why we've talked about how it'll be good to see what Taylen Green is able to do with more time, with more experience. We've said that many times. And so, yeah, I mean, I think having some familiarity there will help. I asked Fernando Carmona yesterday when we spoke with players, you know, we've talked on this show quite a bit about how offensive line can be hard to build out of the portal because of how much development offensive linemen usually need, how much time together they need, how much time in a system they usually need. And so I asked him, you know, was that a concern this year? And are you concerned about having to do that again next year? And he basically said, you know, as hard as it is to lose the starters that we've lost, those of us that are still here have gotten more time in this. Like he feels that they've, you know, retained enough. He's learned enough in the Petrino offense to turn it into more next year and to keep working at it. And so they feel better. You know, last year, everyone was learning it new. Everybody was new to it. Everybody was figuring it out. Now they'll have some guys who are already brought up in it a little bit in addition to some new pieces.
Does it feel to you, because it does to me, that people are just looking for a reason to get freaked out and about Arkansas? It's like Rashad DeBinion, he transfers yesterday. When I look at DeBinion, I'm like, what are you really losing? I mean, he 335 yards, 2 touchdowns, 56 carries this year. He also had a little bit of a fumble problem. So, like, are you telling me you can't replace that in the portal with – because I think you can. I think that we're at a point where people are like, oh, well, there's another one. It just means, you know, the ship is sinking.
Yes.
I just don't know that I buy that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because how many of these players have left, would you say – they really needed to keep that guy. I could probably count 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Like you would say you would want to keep that right. player. But I mean, they went 6-6 this year.
Yeah.
So you can't on one hand get upset about 6-6 and then on the other hand get upset that you're not spending to keep your 6-6 players.
Yeah.
I mean there's got to be a common ground here.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. And I think, you know, I think that's something that is not unique to Arkansas. I think we're seeing fan bases everywhere kind of freak out over similar reasons. People hate the transfer portal so much that anytime people get in it, they're upset about it, which I understand. You know, especially a player like, you know, for example, Luke has. Now, I think that's a guy they would have liked to keep. I think that's probably one of the 3 or 4. I don't know if you agree with that, but I think that's probably.
No, he'd be in them.
Yeah, he'd be in that group of guys you really would have wanted to keep, a guy that's hard to replace. And also because of, you know, he's kind of a fan favorite. Like, people love his story. People love him. And so that the guys like that hurts to see them leave. DeBinion doesn't really fall in that category, I don't think. And, you know, I think with him, with Braylon Russell, which I think Braylon Russell also is a guy that you would have wanted to keep. I think with them, it has to do with potential. I think it's because people saw potential and people wanted to see what they would do more. People felt like those would be guys that next year, given the chance, they would have done more. And they're worried about seeing them go somewhere else and achieve that potential elsewhere.
So Tanya had potential.
Yeah.
And I mean, it got better this year, but it's still
it feels like every year he's been here, we've talked about what his potential is. And
Has,
then it just keeps not happening.
And with Has, there's such an injury proneness with him that I feel like it's kept him from reaching his potential. If you're injury prone, you're injury prone. I don't know that the injury proneness is going to just magically disappear when he goes across the river over
to
Ole Miss.
It didn't when Jaquindon Jackson came here from Utah.
Exactly.
He was injury prone and stayed injury prone.
Yeah, I look at the TJ Metcalf. I think you would have wanted to keep him.
Yeah, for sure.
We mentioned Luke has sirens are going off here in Fayetteville. It's kind of throwing me off as I'm reading here. Braxton, maybe. You know, I mean, he had a good freshman year this year. Didn't really see him a whole lot. Outside of that, I mean, Kudus, maybe.
Yeah.
I think I'll say this about Kudus. I feel like based on what I've seen, it doesn't match up with the portal ranking evaluations of him. I mean, this is a guy who got benched last year.
Yeah,
he was their tackle and couldn't play tackle, so they moved him back inside. And then this year, you know, you didn't see him play a whole lot. It wasn't like the offensive line magically got a
it
whole
got
lot better,
but it didn't get that much better. Right. I mean, it was still not great.
He was an upgrade over Blackstock. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But if somebody said the other day, Kudus, that's an NFL guy. I'm like, really? Maybe he is.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it with him yet.
Right.
Yeah, I just don't know that there's a whole lot of players here that you really should be freaking out about losing. But, you know, I understand that's kind of what happens. I'm going to mention Bob again here because Bob is just he's been on my mind here lately. He always said, you know what fan is short for?
What?
Fanatic. So
yeah.
There
you
go.
He makes a great point. Yeah, no, I mean, and then, like I said, I think this is happening. This is not an Arkansas-specific reaction. This is not just Arkansas fans. It happens everywhere. You know, it's happening at all kinds of different schools. Programs that got more wins than six this year are freaking out about what they're losing. I think Alabama fans are freaking out about stuff. You know,
they're just freaking out.
Well, yeah. So I think, you know, that's just kind of part of it. That's part of sports fandom is the freak out. You know, it's a love-hate relationship.
So when we come back, Christina has been talking to some different reporters and people around different programs for analysis of players who have transferred into Arkansas. And we'll play a few, or we'll talk about a few of those in just a moment.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. A little bit of housekeeping here real quick. We are not going to have a podcast next Tuesday or Wednesday. Tuesday is Christmas Eve. Wednesday is Christmas Day, so we're not going to have a podcast either of those days. We will have podcasts, though, from Memphis next Thursday and Friday, and we will have a special Saturday show the day after the Razorbacks game against Texas Tech over at the Liberty Bowl. We will have a show on Monday, a day that in my house we call Christmas Adam, because Adam became before Eve.
That's smart. We always went Christmas Eve Eve, but I like Christmas Adam better.
Christmas Adam, the 23rd. We will have a podcast that day. Christmas is a week from today.
I know.
You got I'm your shopping ready. Finished?
I think so. I'm still waiting on some things to arrive, but I have bought everything.
I haven't got everything.
That doesn't surprise me.
I'm kind of your typical guy. I wait until the very last second. I'm usually out on like the 22nd.
That's
or the
23rd. What my dad always did. Yeah.
That's what my wife's dad does. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just, you know, they say a girl marries her father.
Yes.
And so
that's really funny.
There's some similarities there. Fernando Carmona has a podcast called the Pin and Pull Podcast. I believe it's with his brother. And he had a podcast that was released earlier this week. And I thought that these were some interesting comments that he made about the team and the practice as they get ready for Texas Tech.
Shooting this on Saturday, we had our first practice Friday. And it's basically like an open tryout right now. You know, the people that have stayed, you know, they're getting their shots. And it's really refreshing out there. Obviously, we're sad to have all these people leave, but at the end of the day, it's a business. And, you know, Cam Ball came up in front of the team before that practice, and he said, we all we need. And I think everybody is truly buying into that message. I'm buying into it. And I think all the captains are kind of just feeding that around the team because, you know, this is all that matters right now is, you know, who's on the team. And yeah, sure, it's sad that we lost a few guys, but, you know, business is business, and the Hogs are going to continue to go. And we all we got, we all we need. And, you know, I think we're really happy with where we're at right now.
Fernando Carmona on the Pin and Pull podcast. You can find that on YouTube if you want to listen to more of it. He also had a great line in there. He was talking about agents and kind of gave a little bit of insight into how agents start contacting the players late in the year. He called them, quote, money vampires. I love that. I love that quote from him. But really good insight there to him. The all we've got is all we need. That harkens back to 2020 when you had the COVID season and you didn't know what you were going to have going into every game because, you know, the contact tracing could take players out. Obviously, you had players who were sick with COVID. And, you know, but Pittman, I remember them going to Mississippi State and winning that game. And he was talking to the players in the locker room. He said, "What did I tell you before we got on the plane? Everybody, you know, all we need is what we're going to get on this plane. All we've got is all we need." And so that's obviously, you know, the message that's coming from Pittman and being relayed through the players. This Tech game, and really it's not just the Tech game, it's all bowl games. It reminds me of what we saw in 2020 because Arkansas is going to be somewhere in the 50 scholarship player range. I mean, they've lost, we mentioned a minute ago, 20-something to the portal. They've got four more who have opted out for NFL draft reasons. And so they're going to be real bare-bones roster for Texas Tech. Texas Tech's going to be at a more full strength. They do have some players in the portal. Their quarterback's also out with shoulder surgery. But it reminds me a lot of what we saw in 2020 where you just go out there, you play whoever you got, and let's see how it turns out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like Carmona, and then he mentioned Cam Ball being the guy that kind of talked to the team about this. Those are two, you know, big leaders on this team that it's great for them to have retained. I mean, those are guys that they need just as far as the locker room is concerned. You know, I asked yesterday when we talked to Carmona and running back Rodney Hill were paired together for our availability yesterday, and I asked them, you know, what is this transfer season like from a player perspective? Like, how are you finding out about these players leaving? Are you finding out from their tweets? Are they telling you? Are coaches telling you? How do you find out? And Carmona said his dad usually lets him know. I think maybe he tries to avoid some social media. A lot of players will do that, try to avoid some social media. He said his dad usually will let him know when something crops up. But he said, you know, he said kind of the same thing when I asked about this. He said, you know, it's all love for those guys. It hurts because a lot of them are good friends. But he said all that matters are the people that are staying here and being Hogs. And Rodney Hill said kind of the same thing. He was like, they're our teammates, you know, forever, and we love them, but people have to make decisions for their family, for themselves, whatever. And these are two guys that have transferred themselves. You know, they are not guys that began their careers here. They are familiar with transfers. You know, Rodney Hill was the one that said that he kind of got screwed over by a money vampire. You know, he had a bad agent situation that kind of led to his circumstances, and that was why he left Florida State and had to kind of have a cup of coffee at Florida A&M before he came over here. So, you know, these are guys that are familiar with how hard the transfer process is and don't necessarily blame guys for having to leave, but also would love to have their teammates here and want Arkansas to be successful.
It's interesting you say that their team leaders right now transferred in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I would like to go back and look at the 85-man scholarship roster at the beginning of August and now say 4 months later, how many of those players have transferred at least once in their college career?
Yeah. I don't think Cam Ball did, right? He's been here.
I think he transferred
did
in.
Did he? I just feel like he's been here for 6 years. Tech, right? So, oh, you might be right. I just always think of him as being. I was shocked when he said he was coming back because I thought for sure he was a sixth-year senior, and it turns out he has plenty.
Well, everybody's got like extra.
Yeah.
No, he did not transfer.
Yeah,
you're
so
right,
he started here, but Carmona was a transfer.
I'm getting these players confused.
My goodness, I don't blame you at all. But but yeah, so he's been here, but Carmona was a transfer this year and immediately kind of became a leader on that offensive line. Taylen Green himself, you know, you need your quarterback to be a leader, and he really took that on. I think that was something that Coach Pittman really worked with him on. Was like, hey, this has got to be your team. You know, when he got here, we remember talking about that a lot when he first started. So, you know, it's interesting to see kind of how that goes.
Cam Ball's from Atlanta. That's
right,
what I'm thinking.
Gotcha.
And I'm getting him confused with this lineman, Cam Robinson, from Georgia Tech.
Uh-huh.
Who they're, so
yes.
I can't keep
a lot of
Cams. I cannot keep everybody straight. But that 85-man scholarship roster, I mean, like 30 of them have transferred or close to it just this offseason. Yeah. Several of them had transferred into the program. I mean, I you're talking about 50, 60 players who were transfers on that roster to begin the year. So you've been doing commitment analysis.
Yeah.
And I was going to pull this up here real quick. I know you've talked to, what, four players? Or you've talked to people about four players?
Three, I think. Four. Yeah. I'm missing Jaquan McRoy. Yes, yeah, McRoy. Four. Working on a couple more. It's
so
funny.
So tell me what you've learned.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting. I usually what I do is talk to a beat writer who covered this player at their previous school. In the case of junior college, talk to the SID from the program. Now, so I talked to somebody about
Can
Keyshawn.
I interject?
Yeah.
There is nobody who knows a junior college program better than the SID because they're probably also the radio man. Who knows? They may send in plays from the press box. I don't know. I mean, it's those guys at junior colleges. They do work.
Yeah. Brian Lentz at Northwest Mississippi Community College was a great person to talk to. He'll probably be at the Liberty Bowl. He helps out with some Liberty Bowl ops stuff because they're not very far from there. But I spoke with him about Keyshawn. I believe it was Davila. I asked him how to say the name. Keyshawn Davila yesterday, the cornerback that they signed. He was the top junior college cornerback in the portal. And, you know, it is a little different when you talk to SIDs because they are used to, especially at junior colleges, they are promoting these guys. You know, they're biased in favor of them for sure. But, you know, he talked about how this was a guy that got, you know, more Division I offers than he's ever seen in his 10 years at this community college. You know, he said he felt like every Power 4 team was involved in recruiting Keyshawn. So he talked about how, you know, he said he probably could have had even more productive numbers, but quarterbacks like weren't wanting to throw at him, weren't really testing him. You know, it seems like if there's one thing that I kind of notice is he's a little undersized. He's 6'1", 165. So he's a little small, a little light, but you know, that's something that's a little bit fixable, you know, once he gets in to a program with SEC resources. And that's something that, you know, Brian Lentz said was, you know, I asked him, how do you feel like the junior college transition typically goes for guys? And do you think Keyshawn can make that jump? And he said, you know, a lot of guys at the JUCO level are doing the same things as players in Division I, but they're doing it with fewer amenities, less support staff, less help. You know, it's almost more of a grind because of less, you know, fewer resources than an SEC program has. And so he said, the only thing I can think of adjustment wise is, you know, it is a different level of competition, obviously. You know, he's going to have to be standing up to guys that were 5-star quarterbacks or are Heisman front runners or favorites or whatever. And that's going to be different. And you know, we will have to see how he stands up to that and how Arkansas, you know, develops him to be able to do that. But this is a guy that, you know, they feel really good about. And they really got a big recruiting win there, being able to land him. I spoke to a writer just via email about Raylan Sharp from Fresno State. Guy you mentioned started his career with Missouri State and Bobby Petrino and Ronnie Fauch. And he talked about how, you know, he came in with big expectations at Fresno State because he'd been an FCS All-American. And the writer I spoke with said that he really kind of lived up to those expectations, and you know, they needed him to fill a hole, and he really did that. He is also small. He's kind of Jordan Anthony size. He's 5'9", 165, which is really similar to Anthony. He was also a track guy, not at Fresno State, but at some of his previous stops. I don't expect he'll be on track at Arkansas, but he could be. So similar comp to Jordan Anthony, who is still on the roster, is expected to be back next year. So you know, that's kind of the situation with him. He had some really good numbers. They had so much coaching staff turnover at Fresno State that him transferring was not really a big surprise. So, you know, I'm interested to see what they do with him. I'm interested to see. I don't know if he has quite the same level of speed as Anthony, but I think speed is kind of his strength. And then Kenai Walker, the cornerback from Oklahoma, he is an interesting case because he lost his starting job late in the year. And I kind of asked the Oklahoma writer I spoke to about that, and he basically said Oklahoma had a hard time. They really struggled with giving up big plays, and Walker was part of that. He was not the only one, but he gave up some big chunk plays. And there was a true freshman who tended to give up fewer, and he ended up kind of taking over the starting role there. And so Walker just kind of saw his playing time dip, which is most likely why he entered the portal. But he was a guy that he said, you know, he's bigger. He's got a size advantage. He said he doesn't feel like he has the foot speed necessarily, but that's something that's teachable, something that Arkansas could work on if that's something they identify as an area of need. And he said he's a guy that's going to compete for balls, which is something that Arkansas really needs. They didn't necessarily have that, or necessarily they didn't exactly have success with it this year. You know, they weren't creating turnovers always, except for the Auburn game was a massive outlier. And they lost the guy in Metcalf that produced almost all of those turnovers.
Four of them.
Yeah. So, you know, he did kind of tout his ability to, you know, go get to the football. You know, he said he's not a guy that gives up on a play or gets smoked. He competes. He had a lot of pass breakups. He had an interception. So that's something that's really important for Arkansas to add. And then we talked a little bit about Jaquan McRoy last time about how he's a guy that they maybe need to get in more playing shape, but a guy that has a lot of athleticism for his size, kind of the kind of offensive tackle that you want. He's kind of the prototype that you would like if they can get him into better playing shape. So, I mean, it seems like they've got a pretty solid group here. I'm going to try to talk to some people about the three that have committed so far that I haven't written about yet, Shanks and then a couple of other guys. But, you know, talk to some people about them. But it seems like they've landed some pretty good pieces, guys that I think they're going to need to do some developing, but I think they're in the position to do that.
Did we learn anything from the players yesterday with what we had? There were four players who spoke.
Yeah,
yesterday,
we spoke
right?
with Taylen Green, Isaac Tislaw, and then Carmona and Hill. A little bit, I would say, you know, just kind of about guys that are stepping up to fill the roles that are going to be needing to be filled with all the opt-outs and transfers and everything. Mm-hmm. Mostly running back. You know, we're going to see a lot of Rodney Hill in this Liberty Bowl. He's excited about that opportunity. And we talked, one thing I thought was interesting was Shamar Easter, the tight end, is actually repping at wide receiver. It sounds like that might be more of a permanent move. And it sounds like it's gone pretty well. Isaac Tislaw talked about that quite a bit and kind of said he was maybe not quite the right, I don't know if body type's the right phrase, but he was maybe not quite right at tight end, but he seemed a lot more comfortable and a lot of a better fit as kind of that big receiver that they've lost on the outside. So I'd be interested if that carries over into, you know, spring practice and fall camp, and talking to Coach Pittman a little bit about if they expect Easter to be able to have more of an impact at receiver than he has at tight end.
And this might be an indictment on us more than anything else, but we figured out yesterday that Juju Pope is a running back now.
Had no idea. Yeah. I texted the football SID and he was like, yeah, that happened in season. But he said, there's no reason for you to have known that unless you were looking at the roster really, really closely every week, which I probably should be. But yeah, so Juju Pope is, so they have three scholarship running backs now, Rodney Hill, Tyrell Reed, and Juju Pope now. Pope had come in as a linebacker. I think they've kind of moved him around. He was recruited as an athlete, you know, did a lot of different things in high school. And so they've kind of just been trying to figure out the best fit for him. I don't know if we'll see him in the Liberty Bowl, but it's possible.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I think he'll certainly benefit from more practice time at running back during these bowl practices. So that'll be something to track, you know, this offseason and next preseason for sure.
You know, what I keep thinking about is the running back nobody's talking about for the bowl game, Taylen Green.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. Yeah. I mean, he's been their second-best runner all season.
For sure.
And so you've still got him against a Texas Tech defense that was really, really leaky during the season, that just fired their defensive coordinator. And they've got a new coordinator, but he's not going to be coaching them during a bowl game. This feels like the type of game, especially with Arkansas's offensive line being patchwork the way it is, where Green might be rolling out and getting a lot of opportunities to run the ball. Just a thought over in Memphis. Hard to believe that game in Memphis is coming up in 9 days?
Yeah.
9 days. Wow.
Yeah. I'm not ready.
Well, there's a lot to go on between now and
there
then.
There is, yeah.
We got a basketball game. We got Christmas. You know,
a lot of just that.
We got a drive
yeah.
over to Memphis.
Oh, yeah.
So, but hey, we appreciate you being here. And we'll have another podcast tomorrow. Until then, hope we'll see you at WholeHogSports.com. Who knows what kind of news is going to break throughout today. Have a great day, everyone.